Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 64. That's right, we're back. You can't stop us, you can only hope to contain us. Or something like that. Joining me this week is Glacinator.
What? And I cannot lie.
My name's Duke Nukem.
Hail to the king, baby.
And
what?
Special guest star. Woo!
I think I just made a horrible mistake. Also joining us this week is Postman Pat.
What is going on, people? Episode number 64. I can't compete with the king, baby. He's got balls of steel.
I've got balls of steel.
Don't let him lie to you. I threw him off with the Postman Pat thing. And if anybody actually gets that reference in our listening audience, I'll be surprised and I'll be impressed, too. My love of British and European TV will come back to kill me one of these days. Let's see. I guess we're doing what we have been playing. The fucking Duke Nukem thing's already making me throw off. Or throw up or something.
You Patrick, talking to me?
Yes, I am, bitch. God damn it.
You're pissing me off.
Was that actually censored? Was it actually censored?
You're gonna die for that.
I'm pretty sure Glacinator has been taken over by the spirit of Duke Nukem.
I'm pretty sure we've given a young kid with a Mac computer way too much freedom in this episode, but that's okay.
I'll stop.
Well, I'm sitting here like waiting for
back. Okay, hello everyone. Yeah. I am back from Duke Nukem Land.
So, do you have balls of steel now?
I personally don't have balls of steel. So.
Mine are made out of titanium, if anybody's curious. Which I doubt anybody is, because it's probably all males that listen to this show. Pat, what have you been playing this week?
Balls of tinfoil. That's me. Anyways.
I thought that was supposed to be a helmet.
Yeah, that's true. Not a heck of a lot that I've been playing this week. I don't know why. I've been busy with work, apparently, and crap. But I did download a new game. Well, it's not brand new. It's about 2 or 3 weeks old. I guess that's how old it is. I must have missed this game back during the renovation days when my house was being torn down and built apart. It's on Xbox Live Arcade and also on the PlayStation Network, so you PlayStation guys can actually access that now, luckily. The video game is called Outland, and it's only 800 points for a brand new game, which is about perfect price pointing, really, for me. Remember last episode or the episode before that, I was talking about that other game, the Gears, whatever the heck it was called. 1,200 points, wasn't it? It was a little too much. This is about the price point that developers need to have as the maximum price point, I think, for downloadable games. If it was 1,200 points, I really would have thought twice about getting it. But for 800 points, it's really good. Again, the game's name is Outland. What is Outland, for those of you who don't know? Well, it's basically a two-dimensional side-scrolling slash action game. It's got plenty of action. I mean, you got a sword, and you're slicing things up, so it's not just side-scrolling, but there is quite a bit of platforming and side-scrolling involved. An interesting thing about it, the art style is really good. I think, Glacinator, if you haven't tried it, try it out just for the art style. Everything is kind of in a silhouette, so you got black backgrounds and bright lights everywhere. Basically, I didn't play too much past the demo, and then I bought the game. But the main point of the game really is there's these two different powers, one of light and one of dark, basically. And what you do is you control. When you're controlling dark, this is hard to explain. Maybe I should have done my homework better. When you can control whether you're in tune with the dark lights or the bright side, so to speak, by hitting the trigger button. And there's a lot of obstacles and there's a lot of enemies and environmental puzzles where you're going to have to switch back and forward. For example, if you're platforming and there's a horizontal platform moving and maybe up top there's a vertical one, not only do you have to jump onto it, but you also have to switch because one platform will be red and one platform will be blue. So you got to figure out to switch which power of the light you're supposed to be on. It's kind of cool. I really like the art style. It's been done before. Similar games have been done in silhouette, but it's pretty neat. There's a lot of action in it. Quite a bit of side-scrolling, quite a bit of platforming, quite well done. What else do? You stick to walls, kind of like in Ninja Gaiden. There's a sliding power that you get. Everyone should at least try out the demo. The demo starts out a little slow. You don't even have the sword or the ability to slide, but it's still pretty fun. Like I said, 800 points is pretty much a perfect price point for a brand new game. It's got multiplayer, that local multiplayer, so you can play with your friends, family, whoever. It also has an online multiplayer, but I think you're gonna do some, it's gonna need some teamwork, so I doubt I'll go with any randoms to play a game that requires, you know, thinking and switching back and forward between the two different colors and stuff like that. It has, I'm pretty sure the campaign is also completely multiplayer, so it's pretty fun. That's basically, I haven't played a lot of it, I'll probably talk a bit more about it later on, but it's getting some pretty good reviews. There's some 9 out of 10s for quite a few, the big GameSpot and IGN, they were giving them 9s out of 10, so it's out. I totally missed it, like I said, probably because of the construction crap around my world. Aside from Outland, that's pretty much the only new game I've been playing. A little bit more on my 3DS. I really wish there were some more games on my 3DS, but not much going on. I'm playing around still with the augmented reality cards. I'll probably put another post up on WonderPod Online sometime. Aside from that, that's really a little bit of Xbox Live, of course, with the WonderPod crew, but that's all that I've been doing this week.
I swear to God, I was thinking that that game you were discussing was called Goopy Gears. I don't know where that came from, but it's actually Gatling Gears.
Goopy Gears.
Goopy Gears sounds even better. Yep. So Atland? Oh, fuck.
Asland?
Out? Iceland? Finland?
Aslan.
Aslan?
Aslan, the missing lion in a Lion, Witch, and Wardrobe.
Aslan. Oh, Lord.
Outland.
Yeah, that too. So, it's kind of a platformer meets Tron meets kind of deal.
Yeah.
But you...
Go ahead.
Well, because the only two things I saw on Twitter, and I did not bother to read any reviews because it's like I've got so many goddamn downloadable games I really shouldn't be buying anymore. And now I'm probably going to do it anyway. Was, it was Limbo, but doesn't suck. And so I like looked at the demo, like the photos in the demo, and I'm looking at this going, what in the hell? This doesn't look anything like Limbo. You don't have a soul.
Yeah, the art style is silly wet like Limbo. That's about it. Yeah. I think you should try the demo if you want to give it out. Definitely, like, I thought about, hey, it's only 800 points. Could do a two-man review. The only thing I'd caution you is there's a lot of platforming, but, I mean, like you said, you'll struggle through a platformer if it's good, so check it
out. Well, and I mean,
I'd be down for playing if you want to.
Have you tried it? At least try out the demo.
Yeah, I'll try
it. You might like it. There's almost a little Super Metroid feel so far to it. The way they've designed the levels, like, it's kind of in caves, and there's side-scrolling vertical and horizontal, and, yeah, it's not bad. I mean, the demo itself, you only get your sword and your sliding ability. You don't really get to do too much with the light and dark stuff. Check out the videos if you want, like, the trailers, and it shows gigantic bosses and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. I liked it. I don't know how I missed it. I'm thinking it was just because I was busy.
I remember it being announced as released, and then several of the more snobbish gaming nerds I follow on Twitter going, oh, it's so wonderful. I think that's how I missed it. I went, oh, yeah, right. Because I liked Limbo. I never beat it because I suck at platformers, but I really liked Limbo. I thought it was a great, you know, and so when I started seeing comparisons, I started really less and less wanting to have anything to do with it. No. Which isn't fair to the game. I'll probably try out the demo this weekend. It sounds like something you and I could do for a two-man review, or if I don't like it, Glacinator and you could do a two-man review with it. Something. Cool. Okay. Glacinator, I know you've been playing a lot this week. What have you been up to?
I'm officially, I'll move back in, so I have my good internet and everything. Well, I finished Portal 2, both the co-op and also the campaign as well. I had one of my friends come over and we beat co-op together. I mean, it's Portal 2. It's a continuation of the first Portal, and it's good. It's a good game. I don't really have any problems with it. I know a lot of people were complaining about it being too short. I thought it was a good enough length that I wasn't getting annoyed at it, or I felt it was lacking in something. The way you finally end up killing the final boss is actually really awesome, and I think it made the whole game worth it, the final boss death. It was so epic. I won't spoil anything. But there definitely is more in it than the first Portal. The worlds are a lot, the levels are a lot bigger. There's a lot more going on. The writing is obviously much improved, and it definitely is some of the best writing I've ever heard and voice acting I've ever heard in a video game. So in that area, it's good. Co-op was also good too. We flew through it pretty fast. I mean, if you are relatively good at solving puzzles and jumping around stuff, it won't be that hard. We finished it in about, I want to say 5 hours. It was a pretty good length. We got stuck for an hour though on two levels. At the very end, but everything else we pretty much just knew what to do immediately and flew through it. Well, that wasn't necessarily a bad thing, but you know, there could have been a little bit harder levels, but I'm not ratting on them since I'm more of an experienced gamer and I was fine with it. Also this week I got LA Noire on Tuesday, and I'm already on the second disc, which surprised me because there really wasn't, the first disc really didn't have that much game time on it. I say it's maybe about 5 hours, and then it was onto the second disc. And I was talking to Bruce about it on Minecraft, and he said it's most likely due to rendering maps, which I guess makes sense because the map is so humongous. But I did feel that maybe there could have been a little bit more content on each disc. I know they're pushing it, but that's just me. I guess I'll start off with things that I don't like about it right away. Things that I don't like are definitely it's very repetitive sometimes. A lot of the cases can be similar, and the way you go about solving them is very similar. They all start off, you're in the police station, you go out, you go investigate the crime scene, you go look at a body in the morgue, you go ask witnesses. You know, it's like actual police work, which is good. It replicates that very well. But, it can get a little old after, if you're playing constantly for a long time, you can get annoyed with it. Another problem I had was, there really isn't very much going on in Los Angeles itself. The city is very empty. I'm not sure how many people were there in 1940, but if it feels very empty when you're driving around, there's no one really walking around, and all the cars look exactly the same, which probably was true back then, but I don't know. It feels kind of blah when you're just driving around. What else? Things that I like, the writing is very well done. Sometimes it feels like you're actually just sitting down and you're actually in the movie. You're controlling the outcome of this movie, which I guess is sort of what they were trying to go for. It definitely is linear. It's not, it says that it's a sandbox, but it really is, it's a very linear story and you do have to stick with the path. I do have more stuff to gripe about it, but I'll just leave that for later. And other than LA Noire, I've just been playing Minecraft. We finally set up a Minecraft server with Bruce, and I'm sure you've heard part of my voice now, so I'll let Bruce tell you about Minecraft.
I haven't been playing a heck of a lot. Glacier is right. Him and I did argue, well, not argue, but did discuss LA Noire the other day, and I think I would tell you, even though I have not played the game, that you probably be... Let me say that again. You probably should be ready for more RPG-like elements than, say, a Grand Theft Auto or something like that. Because from what Glacinator was describing to me when we were playing Minecraft, it makes it sound like it's less Grand Theft Auto and more RPG. So, but, I mean, it kind of all depends on what you're into.
Yeah, when you go into the game, you have to remember that this isn't a Rockstar game. Rockstar is just the publisher. This is a Team Bondi production. So you have to... remember that when you're playing.
Well, from what I've heard, and I read a couple, three reviews for it, I mean, I knew it was one that was going to be, for me, like, deep in the wintertime, you know, when I got plenty of time to play it straight through or screw around with it, you know. The writing and the story alone, and especially some of the research Team Bondi did for it, like, actually using the Black Dahlia murders, or murder, which was a huge case in the 40s. You don't hear a ton about it today, but it was pretty provocative for the times. And just the way they kind of worked in at least elements of actual city history.
I mean, yeah, it definitely looks like it's 1940. They've definitely got a lot of the props down, I'd say. So.
Exactly, but I just kind of wanted to also give to our audience, because listening to you talk about it when we had way more time, it just made me think, well, I guess you better prepare for some RPG-like grinding to a certain extent. But I wouldn't let that scare you away from it either, I don't think.
I mean, it's a game. Don't get me wrong here. It's just, I'm not a very big RPG person. Neither is Pat, as you guys know. So just well, prepared for that.
And Pat's not a GTA person either. I don't think we ever talked him into playing Red Dead Redemption. So, and it was nothing like GTA. So, I mean, Rockstar kind of painted itself into a corner to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they're just the publisher on this game, you see the name Rockstar on it. And I have to admit, I'm not a huge fan of the Grand Theft Auto series. So it's, in fact, I don't think I've ever finished a single one, and I have quite a few of them for PlayStation. So it is kind of, I don't know if I'd call it unfair, but it is kind of a stigma that sticks with Rockstar. So, there you go. I've been playing not a heck of a lot. I'm kind of like Patrick. I've only played three games, really. Played one night of Monday Night Combat with the crew, and some Left 4 Dead, I think. But then I picked up The Witcher. Now, for those of you that keep tabs of the gaming industry, The Witcher 2 just released. And it finally dawned on me that I'd missed the original Witcher entirely, because that was during a period in my life when I did not have the internet. I didn't have a computer, or a computer worth a damn for anything. So good old games had it for like $4.99, some special, because The Witcher 2 is dropping on Tuesday. So I picked it up this weekend. Boy, it's hard to say what I think about that. I'm kind of like Glacinator. I don't really know what to make of it. I mean, I like a lot of it. It's definitely an RPG, but it kind of gets a little repetitive at times. And I'm to a point now where one quest I have to do, I'm sitting there dreading it. Like, I keep avoiding doing it. And it's not because the game's horrible. It's just the setting and certain aspects of the quest are just going to be long and involved. I'll have to be in the right mindset for it. It does some very unique things, or at least, you know, it did at the time that I found interesting. It kind of added some elements to a single player RPG that had only been seen in MMOs. And again, this is my take on it. There's some crafting things and some other things. And, basically what I've been doing the last few games is you can sleep with women. Ooh, all the basement nerds are going to love it. And when you do, you get like these collectible cards. They're like 1950s era Playboy covers is almost what you would think of it as. It's not like pornographic, but it's just hilarious because I've started calling it the porn minigame. Like, when I'm tired of doing quests, I just look up, okay, I haven't slept with that woman yet. I haven't slept with that woman yet. But it kind of does the Fable thing, except I found the way they do it more interesting than Fable. Plus, you don't get anybody pregnant and you don't get any STDs because the game doesn't care. Overall, The Witcher is pretty good. I definitely plan to finish it, plan to spend some more time on it. And then also, because it was like 200 points, I picked up Asia Booty from Capcom, which is, it's an RTS game basically, but it's a fun RTS game because while you're given objectives similar to an RTS, and it has very linear maps similar to an RTS, and by linear I just mean small and with well-defined boundaries, it's more action-packed than that. Basically, if you're playing single-player, you're given an objective. You have to play against increasingly harder and harder enemies. You're a pirate, obviously, because it's called Age of Booty. And it's challenging. It's a lot of fun. I think it would be, if you've got four or five buddies that love RTS games, I think it could be really fun in that. I'm enjoying the single-player. I don't know what the price has gone back up to now. Microsoft this week had a Pirates theme on Xbox Live because of the Pirates movie that's either released or going to be released. I haven't spent a ton of time with that yet. I'll have to get back to you on it. I may be picking up Outland now, sounds like. Finally, yeah, Glacinator and I have talked off and on for months about setting up a Minecraft server, and both of us tried it on our everyday computers and could not get it to work. So I had an old computer laying around here that I knew still ran, didn't have anything on it. So I basically just gave it a lobotomy so that it was running nothing but the Minecraft server. It's a lot of fun. It takes some getting used to, at least from my perspective, to having somebody else there. Because when you play solo and you see minerals or stuff you want, you're kind of like Daffy Duck in the old cartoons. You know, it's mine, mine, mine. You understand? It's mine. You know, and I mean, you just go after it. And I suppose you could be a dick and do that when you're playing in multiplayer, but it's not going to work out well for you. I mean, granted, right now it's just Glacinator and I, and Glace and I both get along really well. So we basically just been exploring caverns, which I'm not 100% sure this just isn't a fact of life of the multiplayer, but both of us have been blown away by the fact that the caverns near our spawn are humongous. I mean, to the point where our silly asses have to put signs out because we get lost. In my case, that may just be because I'm stupid. You know, and of course you build buildings. I kind of just started. I actually told Glacinator in the chat in the server, it's like, if I start getting too linear, just smack me. You know, because I tend to build very linear, very, very carpenter-like. I don't get out there. I'm not 100% sure you would consider the building I've built in this server out there, but it's far more interesting than I normally get up to. Yeah. I suppose it's out there to a certain extent. But then Glacinator's built himself one off of a natural formation that I find to be really cool. We've got a community hut that I'm jokingly calling it. You know, and what I mean, we've only been playing, what, Glacinator, probably 3 days?
Yeah, at most three.
Yeah, and I mean, we've already got a lot of stuff done. If you're not a dick, or we already know you and know you're cool and you have Minecraft, send a message to WonderPod Online Facebook, mostly so you can annoy Patrick. And if you'd like to join us, right now with the setup that I'm using, I have no idea how many people it can handle before it'll crash. We've been doing some testing. Glacinator and I ran into some lag this afternoon, but the server box had been on all day, and the server box is getting a little old. It's nothing to write home about, but for a multiplayer server, I'm not spending a lot of money. At least not yet. So, you know, if you are in the listening audience, if you have Minecraft, and if you're not going to be a jackass, shoot us a message. Patrick at the end of the show will tell you plenty of different ways to do that.
Join us.
Yeah, join us so we can ritually sodomize you, because that's what you have to do to be able to play with us.
Wow.
I don't know. What is it with me and sodomy today? I just don't know. Yeah, well, you know, every day. Well, as I was saying earlier, I rape people when I go to...
Shit happens.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right, dude.
Yeah, speaking of which, Jonathan Keyhill, ladies and gentlemen, people, you know him, and we've had him on before. He responded with ack on our Facebook when I said that we've turned Glacinator loose with the soundboard. And on that note, that is what we've been playing. Let's see. Let's move on to our debate topic. It was funny. I really need to see either save links or write notes or do something. I saw an article earlier this week where some studio, and it was a studio you'd probably recognize if I could remember the name, was talking about how, they've always wanted to focus on one IP and they really do well with doing that and this and that. And I kept thinking, you know, that's an interesting thought. Is it smarter for a developer to focus on one IP, a la Bungie, with up to this point just Halo? Or can you get away with focusing on multiple IPs, a la, say, like BioWare? Or these gentlemen can come up with their own examples, whatever. I'm just giving you hints here. So that's basically my question. Patrick, why don't you tear it up? Is one IP the best way to go for a developer, or multiple, or something in between, or punt?
Well, it seems like lately, and by lately I mean the last 3 or 4 years, Developers seem to be doing better by sticking to one IP and concentrating. Maybe it's because games are getting much more complicated and they need their entire development house working on one game to make it perfect. I can't think of too many companies these days, development houses, so to speak, that successfully can come up with a multitude of IPs. On the other hand, as we were discussing earlier, I can think of a company back in the day that did nothing but create multiple IPs and multiple genres, and they were highly successful. That, of course, would be Rare. I mean, they were making first-person
Why did I know?
shooters. They were making first-person shooters, IPs like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. Then they would turn around and they would make 3D platform games, IPs such as Banjo-Kazooie and what's-his-name and Conker. Then they'd turn around and make two-dimensional fighting game IPs such as Killer Instinct. Then they'd turn around and make racing game IP in the Donkey Kong universe with Diddy Kong Racing. Then they'd turn around, well, you get the point. So, but that almost goes back into my back-in-the-day thing. I don't know today, within the last 3 or 4 years, that many developers that can pull that off. I mean, Rare back in the day was also being funded by Nintendo. They were their right-hand man, second-party developer. So they were very talented. They had a big staff, and they had Nintendo's money. So they were able to do it. These days, there aren't too many second-party publishers that are huge and that are being funded. So I think we've come to a point where it's better for companies now to just focus on one game because the games are so huge. Focus on one IP. Back in the day, you know, the good old days of Rare, yeah, it was able to be done. But I think nowadays, I think it's better to just stick to one IP, personally.
Yeah, you and Rare.
That's right.
Sitting in a tree. By the way, you and Gunsage are both fucking nuts. As far as the whole GoldenEye 64 thing, I could have started a fanboy war from hell on that post. Let's just put it that way. And no, it would not have been Turok. It sucks. Glacinator, what are your thoughts on multi-IPs, one IP, no IP, or you have to pee?
Well, I actually peed before the podcast, but I'm definitely going to have to go the single one root IP. I wasn't really around that much, or didn't really care that much, when games, or when developers could, like, spread out. So really, all that I'm really know about is just developers making a single IP nowadays, which is usually what's been the case. And, which I think does help, because it allows for the developer to put all their assets into that one franchise, I guess you could call it, and just help it grow and help it move along. Whereas, With a lot of different IPs, a lot of projects can fail out and you lose all of your investment in that IP, which I think does happen a lot nowadays. And developers are realizing that. I think besides Bungie, Ubisoft is definitely putting a lot of their money into L.A. Noire. I mean, not L.A. Noire, why did I say that? I'm into Assassin's Creed right now. It definitely, they picked it up from Ubisoft Montreal and they're just letting it grow. So right now there definitely is a trend towards single IPs, and I really can't say much for spreading out your assets anymore.
Yeah, but Ubisoft using the Activision milk it like a cow until it falls over in a pile of dust method of working Assassin's Creed, though, that would be...
I think no, but it's hard to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to ruin your dreams. Not this time around, anyways. We'll wait. I mean, but you are correct. That is focusing on one IP. Patrick is correct, and as much as I was giving him shit here and on Facebook, Rare did do it. A lot of times, being a PC gaming nerd from way back in the day, tend to get a little tired of the Rare love fest in first-person shooters. But they did. They did a really excellent job with splitting their focus. One company that I think does it today and did it back then, granted with some very excellent partners, which is kind of the same as Rare having Microsoft's money bins, or excuse me, not Microsoft, shit, Nintendo, now it's Microsoft, would be BioWare. If you can do it kind of like BioWare does, and not that everything BioWare does is excellent, and we'll especially see how they handle it once the Star Wars MMO comes out, whenever that's happening, I think if you do it like BioWare, then you can handle multi-IPs. Now that said, all you have to do to look at how this generation, or let's just say from like 2000 onwards, should be handled is Halo. Now I've said on the show when Jim Sterling was on and multiple other times since then, the Halo thing culturally just escapes me. I just don't get it. But I also can sit there and critically look at the Halo franchise and understand that is how you manage a single IP, and you'd almost be just insane to not focus on that when your user base, your fan base is so ginormous and so enthusiastic, possibly over-enthusiastic. So I think I have to agree with these guys that probably the trend should continue unless you're going to kind of handle it like BioWare. I mean, Patrick, I know you don't play a lot of BioWare games, but don't you think they're kind of this generation or this time period's Rare to a certain extent? I mean, Rare was more prolific, but...
Well, they definitely have the ability to make different IPs, which is actually, for this generation is difficult to do, so I definitely respect that for sure. Because it's a different ball game, I guess. The cost of development and the size of the game is so much bigger now. So yeah, they've kind of, sort of like this generation's version, I guess, in a way.
They don't make anything you like to play. So that's kind of
still quality, though.
There isn't. Let's
not tour them out.
There is no BioWare franchise that you've played, is there? Console. I'm not going back to.
Yeah,
to,
I mean, I wouldn't even remember. Not really. Nothing on consoles. No. Kind of weird.
You never even got into Mass Effect because that's like the lightest RPG you could ever get. Really.
I didn't even play their Knights of the Old Republic. They took my Star Wars nerd license temporarily away.
They should take it permanently away. I forgot about that, and it's still only like $15 on. Yeah, payday comes around. I'm gifting you a copy of that on Steam. I had forgotten about it. Because that is not. I mean, that I never did go back and finish it again, even though I beat it like four times now when I bought it on Steam. But it's funny because BioWare, I think, understands the non-RPG nerds better than anybody else, even though they've made games like Baldur's Gate, Planescape Torment, you know, I mean, Neverwinter Nights, Icewind Dale. Of course, a lot of that was also Black Isle, and BioWare was just a publisher, but they were, you know, heavily involved. So, but I think you guys have it, and I think all you have to do, as much as I'm sure some people think it pains me, is hold up the Halo franchise, because, I mean, right up until Reach, you know, it was gangbusters with Bungie at the helm. And as I've said 1,000 times on this show, we'll see if it was the franchise that kept people's interest or the way Bungie handled the franchise, if anything comes out from here forward. Plus, we'll also see how many people flock to whatever Bungie does next. It's the only reason I give a shit about E3. Is Bungie going to say anything, and is Respawn going to say anything?
Well, Bungie said they're already not saying anything.
Yeah, but so did Gabe Newell of Valve. I don't believe anybody. Until the show's over, I don't believe anybody's lying asses. Because David Jaffe, no Twisted Metal, no Twisted Metal this year. Oh, look who's at fucking E3. I mean, I'm not yelling at you, Glacinator. I know what, I know what Bungie has said, but they're all lying sacks of shit. It's so hard to do any surprises at E3 anymore. They basically gotta lie. I mean, it was the way Jaffe went about lying out his ass that pissed me off. I don't know. I don't think we're going to see Gabe Newell at the Sony press conference this year. It hasn't really gone well for Valve. now I'm making Sony jokes like Patrick. That's bad. Okay, that has been our debate topic. I think I scared Glacinator into a coma, and even though I wasn't yelling at him, I just hate that.
No, I'm fine. Whatever.
Oh, no. I'm just flicking shit, dude. Calm down. Everybody calm down. Deep press.
You're pissing me off.
That was well timed. Patrick.
Yes.
I heard this rumor that we have a Facebook question, and it may also be true that we're actually going to get to it week one rather than 6 months later.
It is amazing. I think that's what some people stopped sending us Facebook questions because we were so lazy that we forgot to answer them or shows got taken off or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that happened a couple times.
Yeah. But yes, we do. One of our latest friends this week on Facebook, a fine gentleman by the name of Chris Lloyd, who has a pretty good, what is it, Chris Off MySpace is his site, and he's got some great YouTube videos, so check that out if you can. Anyways, he asked us a question here, so I might as well just say it. That'll work. All right, here it goes.
There we go. That's what we're waiting on.
That's what we're here for. Okay, so here's a question for – this is his – I'm sorry, it is quotes. Here's a question for you to maybe answer via internet radio ings. All right, here we go. Are there any games that you played long ago that you loved but are not keen to replay now in case you ruin your perception of them or any good memories you had while playing them? So who wants to go first?
Glacinator does.
All right, I'll go first. I mean, I have my answer, so...
Oh, that's good, because I don't.
Okay. You guys heard me talk about before how much I like to play Pokemon. Yes, Pokemon. And while I do rant and rave about it a lot, I don't think I could ever go back and play the original Red and Blue versions. Just because when that experience I got when I first played them being my very first video game, was so like special and unique that I don't think I could ever replicate that experience again if I ever went back and played it now. Mostly just because I would already know what would happen. And also it's just an easy game flat out. So it was well suited for a 6 year old at the time. So yeah, I guess my choice would definitely be the first Pokemon games.
Now that we screwed him up completely with text chat, Pat, why don't you just go ahead and go next, and I'll go last. This is like the soundboard edition. I forgot about that goddamn yoop, or I wouldn't have done it. All right. Pat's going next, if you hadn't figured it out.
Alrighty. Well, I have a few, really, that I think were are best to be enjoyed and loved for their time there, Chris. Well, I'm gonna go with Ninja Gaiden for the very first version Ninja Gaiden on the NES. I played a little bit of it a little while ago, so it's kind of cheating, and it just didn't have the same effect. I mean, imagine me as a tiny little kid. It's hard to imagine me being tiny at all. But the first video game, Ninja Gaiden was probably old by then, but the first video game I ever played with cinematic cutscenes. You know, of course, for the time they were terrible, but for the time they were awesome, right? So, I mean, imagine a first video game you've ever played where it's telling a story through cinematics. And so that cool experience. And then the game itself for its time was really cool, the sticking on the walls and the really difficult bosses and everything. And I just kept playing and playing to see the next cinematic and the next thing going on. So I think Ninja Gaiden is definitely a game that, as you said, that I loved. But I don't really want to replay it now because I'll see all the faults and I'll see, you know, everything's evolved so much more. Another one I have, now that you're making fun of my love for the greatest second party developer in Nintendo history, Rare, I don't think I'd really want to go to an actual N64 and stick back in GoldenEye. You know, for its time it was awesome, but first person shooters have evolved so much. I know when Perfect Dark came out on Xbox Live Arcade, they fixed the frame rate up to 60 frames. They fixed some textures. They put it in high def. They put it online. Even with those things that they did to fix it, it just didn't feel right, especially online multiplayer. It felt really old. So I think going back to GoldenEye 007 right now on my Nintendo 64, it's probably something that I'd rather keep my great memories of how great it was for its time and not play it now. So, good question.
Yeah, I think that's first-person shooters of all platforms back then. you know, because as much as I was teasing you and Gunsage earlier about, you know, his post, his FPS of the Year post, the FPS genre is just come so many light years ahead of where it was in, like, you know, the N64, PC era. I mean, RPGs and platformers and RTS still retain a certain amount of their base characteristics no matter what. But man, it's hard to believe. I've gone back and played like Quake and some of those other older FPSs, and it's just like, wow. I mean, even Perfect Dark for me, and I only played it once or twice on an N64, was like, wow, yeah, I remember this. Polygons for the win. You know, it's funny, Chris, because I actually had to think about this one, and I thought about it a lot before the show, and I was really glad these guys were willing to go before I did, because I really couldn't think of one that I was afraid to go back and play. I'd had one that I was afraid to go back and play, but I went ahead and did it, so that kind of didn't count, but I'm going to quickly run through both of those, because it had, you know, it's kind of telling. The one I really do not want to replay is Burger Time. Now, while Burger Time was a pretty simple game, it was an Atari game, it's not like one of the ones that's remembered for all time, like Pac-Man or some of that other stuff. I loved Burger Time. I just loved that game. It was so silly and outrageous to me and so much fun. And I'm not sure if you're aware, but about two, three months ago, screenshots started popping up of an all-new, I think, arcade, as in Xbox Live or PSN arcade, version of Burger Time. It's all 3D, the shift's 3D, everything's 3D, and I'm looking at these screenshots and I'm going, wow, that looks really cool. But at the same time, I don't know if I'll ever be able to bring myself to play it. So many of my really good memories of the Atari 2600 and the arcade were based around Burger Time. I'm not sure I want to play the 3D souped up new one. We'll see as it gets closer to being released or as I see more on it. Because the other one, the one I did actually go back and play, was Planescape Torment. Now, anywhere I've written, anywhere I've babbled on podcasts, I've talked about Planescape Torment. People who are RPG fans that haven't played it, you know, I tell them all the time, oh, if you love RPGs, you need to go play this game. To me, it's the best RPG that I've ever played. I mean, you can have the fanboy arguments, all that crap. Great writing. Some of the best writing of any game I've ever played. And about a year or so ago, and I forget, it came up on another podcast, and about a year or so ago, I was giving a couple people crap on Twitter about playing through it. And they're like, oh, well, when's the last time you played through it? And I thought, you know, I really don't want to, but I decided, you know what, I will. Still love the game. Still, all the memories I had, all the fondness I had for the writing, for the characters, for a couple cutscenes in particular, or a couple little quests in particular, were still there. Does that mean it's going to be the same for everything? Maybe, maybe not. It kind of depends, but I definitely know, at least in that case, I dodged the bullet, but, you know, you asked a really good question, and I debate in my mind, because I've gotten lucky once, and I'm not sure with Burger Time I'll get lucky again. So, there you go. Patrick, we should give ourselves a pat on the back. We answered a question first time out of the box.
Yes, that's very impressive. What would Duke Nukem think?
Yes, what does Duke think?
Blow it out your ass.
Oh, man, is that his... Oh, poor Chris. Poor Chris Lloyd.
Son of a bitch.
That wasn't us, Chris. You're gonna have to take that. You're gonna have to take that up with Duke, man.
What?
And it don't sound like Duke's taking any smack.
No, he wants you to come get some.
Shit happens.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Okay, so thank you, Chris. We appreciate you listening to the show. We appreciate you joining up with us on Facebook. I haven't watched too many of your videos yet, but it is on the to-do list, probably this weekend when I have more time.
Gotta watch.
Thanks for the
Your musical one's funny. Yeah, that one's funny.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay.
What are we doing? Are we doing a podcast? It's one of those shows, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah. Cosmonaut G, that guy. Yeah, he's here every week. Fuck, you think I'd remember that? I think he has a question. I think he's still in space. Or he might be on Earth. I don't know. Let's find out. Take it away. Fuck. Cosmonaut.
Survivor not.
Yeah, there you go.
WonderPod security interface detection online. External message. Probe detected.
System analysis.
Detects sender. Data analyzed.
What's up, WonderPodOnline.com crew? Cosmonaut G here with another question for you gentlemen. It's been a long week back up in space. I keep having reoccurring nightmares about the alien returning to get me. Maybe with all the power messed up, this place feels a little bit too much like Dead Space, or Dead Space 2. As much as I like my zombie and apocalyptic films, being alone for this long without contact is pretty lonely. Sorry, Diddy. I've always got you. My little buddy, at least. You know, I feel like this monkey and I are kind of bonded. First half of his monkey clan was slaughtered by the giant sea monster back in parts unknown. Then the alien came looking for me and murdered the rest of the monkeys. Kind of like how it killed all my old crew up here. And since I am back to the place where I started, I've been having a feeling of nostalgia. Everywhere I turn, memories flood in. What better a time to hit up Wonderstalgia? Yep, it's about that time. As I wander the halls, I'm also reminded of navigating other hallways in search of yellow dots to eat, and the worry of ghosts coming to get me. I think you must know where I'm going with this. Pac-Man. Possibly the best known game ever, and certainly one of the pioneers in creating the phenomenon of video games as we know it. Love it or hate it, Pac-Man is one of the most important games of all time. In 1980, Namco released Pac-Man in Japan, and shortly thereafter, it was distributed by Midway in the US. In fact, Sunday, May 22nd marks the anniversary of its release. In the 31 years that have passed, Pac-Man is one of the most recognized video game characters in the United States, at 94% of all consumers there knowing what a Pac-Man is. Interestingly, though, there are only three video games on display in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. Pac-Man, Pong, and Dragon Slayer, the latter being a title we have already spoken about, myself included, on a previous episode that I was able to take part in live. Oddly enough, in outer space as well. Anyway, today I would like to hear all about Pac-Man from the crew. Describe the game, your experiences playing it, and your take on it. Well, guys, that's my cue to end this transmission, and, wait a second. What does that red light mean? Attention? Estimated error remaining 1 week? Shit. Cosmonaut G, signing off.
Radio signal complete.
Well, thank you for the good question there, what are we calling you, Survivor Not? Survivor Not G, Cosmonaut, Survivor Man, Spaceman, whatever you are. Good to hear you're still at least alive and kicking, but something about running out of air or something, that's not good. Anyhow, Pac-Man, what good timing. It's amazing that you sent this Pac-Man question with the birthday of Pac-Man coming up. Almost too amazing. You're a smart man. So he wants to talk about Pac-Man with the name of Pac-Man. You know I like Pac-Man. Heck, that's half the reason why I chose that silly internet name of mine anyways. Really love the Pac-Man. I mean, I've done some reviews for Pac-Man, the Pac-Picks on the Nintendo DS, and I've played some of the latest ones there, the best one on Xbox Live Arcade. I'd like everyone should try at least a free demo. Pac-Man Championship Edition DX or whatever the hell the latest one is. Really good, really fun. But let's talk about the first one, first few ones. I don't remember playing Pac-Man for the first time. I do remember playing the sequel, Miss Pac-Man, which to me was almost a better game. I like the little change in the mazes and stuff like that. My favorite experience with Pac-Man is not, believe it or not, in the arcades, even though those are the best versions. It's way back when I was a little kid. My big brother and I got a gift. I think it was from my grandmother. It was a long time ago. He was a little older, my brother. And it was one of those, what was it, the Coleco, those mini cabinets. You know those ones? There was a Donkey Kong one, a Zaxxon one, and a Pac-Man one. For those of you who don't know what they are, they look like a little arcade cabinet, but it's almost like a twin stick handheld thing. And it looks just like, maybe I'll post it on the site, just like Pac-Man. That was probably my favorite version of Pac-Man, because at my age it was cool. It was like, hey, I have a little miniature arcade cabinet. I remember my brother and I annoying the shit out of our family with that annoying Pac-Man noise. It wasn't exactly like the arcade, and it was just repetitive, and we just played it over and over and over again. People were regretting that my grandmother gave us that Pac-Man mini arcade thing back in the day. So that's probably my favorite Pac-Man memory, but there's so many. I mean, they've managed to put Pac-Man everywhere. Literally, he's even bigger than Mario when it comes to popularity and it comes to recognition. Pretty much everybody knows who the hell Pac-Man is, and I'm glad he's still around. And, you know, it just goes to show a simple puzzle action game can capture the hearts of gamers and become probably the biggest icon of all. So that's what I'm thinking of Pac-Man. What do you guys think about him?
Duke, or whoever, it's your turn.
Eat shit and die.
I have actually never played okay, no, I can't lie. Who has not played Pac-Man, seriously? That is the one game that grandmas have played, your baby brother has played, dogs have probably even played it at some point in their dog life. I don't remember the first time I ever was on the actual cabinet, but I'm trying to remember way back. There was one at our bowling alley that I played, and this was when I was maybe about 4 or 5. I really didn't know. I put a quarter in because it looked cool. I didn't know what was going on though, so I died a lot. I thought that was a point, I think, the first time I played, was you're supposed to die. And so I've played on various cabinets from that time on. I do agree with Pat though. Miss Pac-Man is definitely much better. It just flows a lot better than the original one does. But the original one does have the nostalgic charm to it. Besides the original Pac-Man, I've played different variations of it. Some in 3D, some that were bad. But you do have to stick with the classics. Pac-Man was definitely a good game. I'd say it was a good game because it is so popular and is so universal for gamers and non-gamers out there.
Hello there, Survivornaut G. I, like everybody else, I like Pac-Man. I mean, it's one of the first games I ever played, all that stuff. You know, all the stuff you gotta say that you're contractually obligated to say if you're a nerd so you don't get your nerd card revoked. In my case, it's absolutely true, too. I mean, I did. But I think the thing 30-some-odd years later that just still astounds me about Pac-Man, and Patrick's hit on it just briefly, was how simple it is. You look at even the souped up, pimped out versions we're getting on Xbox Live Arcade. I was playing one of those the other day. Don't even ask me which version because I don't know. And it's just simple. You move around a board, you eat pellets, you avoid ghosts. And it's become iconic, as Patrick said. That fascinates me, how something so simple can become so iconic. And I mean, it is to me too, but more so because of the fact that it's just, everybody knows that. I mean, at least with Mario, Mario has had so many different and diverse adventures and misadventures, you know, that it's easier to understand sometimes with Mario. But Pac-Man, I think it was because it was the first, or because it was so early, and it was the first one. I mean, even back then, if you stop and think about it, Pac-Man, for all its simplicity, was really pretty. I mean, Space Invaders, some of those other ones, they were really pixelated. You know, Pac-Man on a cabinet or on a table was just, you know, it flowed. I mean, it didn't flow as well as Miss Pac-Man, as the other two pointed out, but, you know, it just flowed. It was simplistic. It was a lot of fun. It was fast-paced. There wasn't too much jagged about it. And it is just endured. I mean, you know, you look at like Penny Arcade. I mean, back in their beginnings, Mike Krahulik is a huge Pac-Man fan. They've done a ton of stuff about Pac-Man, and everybody knows it. You can go read their comic, or you can just go up to somebody on the street and say, what do you think of when I say Pac-Man? Now, if they don't run away screaming and try and report you to a cop, they'll probably tell you it's a really great video game, even if they've never played a video game in their life. So, but for something so simplistic to be able to do that, it just astounds me and amazes me, and I love Pac-Man. I don't love it as much as Pat, I know that, but I do love it. So, I hope... Go ahead, whoever's chiming in there.
Oh, did you know that the original name for Pac-Man was Puck-Man?
Yeah, there's some other cool trivia about that, like when they tried to translate certain things from Japanese, how it didn't go very well.
I guess you didn't get the quote. Oh, well. If anyone got
it there, run it by me again.
Five you over the internet somehow, if you got that quote.
Say it again, because I...
Well, I have to say in the... Did you know that the original name for Pac-Man was Puck-Man? I can't do his voice, but... Someone
Patrick,
get it.
Patrick, did you get that, or am I the stupid one here? Is that the thing?
I'm not quite sure. It was. He's right. It was Puck-Man. They thought that they would easily be able to vandalize that into a different word, and that's why they changed it to Pac-Man.
That's what I was looking for, the explanation, because my brain no thinky. Yeah, well, if you think about the way it was written on some of those arcade cabinets and how we were as children.
Yep.
Whose voice were you trying to imitate just for the audience at home?
Michael Cera's.
Stick with Duke.
Okay.
Duke, what do you think of Pac-Man?
I like big guns.
Pac-Man didn't have any guns, if this is true.
What's the difference?
That's right, Duke.
That's right, yep. Duke. All right, Cosmonaut. Oops. I ran over Duke. Ha! I ran over Duke. Survivor Not G, we appreciate your question. I hope your air stays airy inside the Escape Wonder Pod. This would have been a good episode for me to film. Because even I'm giving myself weird looks like, airy? What the fuck is that? Okay, let's move on to news, folks. As I said before, with the news until E3, as I said earlier when I kind of made Glacinator wonder what was going on, there's a lot of lying going on, so I just don't know even what to report on anymore, so we're kind of trying to be very careful with the news stories, although I do have breaking news that's not 3 days old or 2 or 3 days old. I'm going to give it to you right now. The Rapture has been canceled, so you just need to not worry about it. It has been canceled. It'll be rescheduled at a later date. And if you get that joke, then you pay attention to current news that isn't gaming. Now let's move to gaming, which our first story. I think I lied, imagine that, and said that we would be doing no more Sony stuff. Well, we're going to do one more Sony thing, at least involving the breach, the taking down of the PSN or whatever, because it involves their Welcome Back program, which as a non-Sony gamer, and a quote-unquote outside observer, I was extremely impressed with. So I'm just going to tell you fine folks what Sony's doing for the people as they bring back PSN. And there you have it. The story comes to us from computerandvideogames.com. The headline is Sony lists free PS3 games for PSN users. Basically, the users are giving a list of 5 games. They could pick 2 of those games. The free users, meaning they don't, you know, they just plug in and play, they are going to get 30 days of the PS Plus subscription. The people who already subscribe to PS Plus will get 60 days, which I thought was kind of a nice tip of the hat. You won't hear as much bitching because the free users got 30 days. And here's the list of games. First, PS3. Now, again, gamers could pick any 2 from this list. Little Big Planet, Infamous, Wipeout HD Fury, Ratchet & Clank Quest for Booty, and Dead Nation. PSP users, you know, that means Kevin Butler and Marcus, because I think they're the only people that own PSPs. Little Big Planet, PSP, Mod Nation Racers, PSP, Pursuit Force, and Killzone Liberation. Now, of course, I'm going to kick it to the two guys with me who are much smarter here, smarter than I am here in a second, but here's all I have to say. Those of you PS3 users out there bitching and moaning about it not being current games, about it being games you already have, and bitching that, whoa, there's a bunch of Xbox fanboys who just bought a PS3 to let it collect dust, and look, now they get free shit. Shut up. Shut up. You're lucky you got anything. Trade in your old games. Get two free new ones. Although I think they are digital download. I was impressed as a gamer in general with what Sony's giving here. And given that I don't have the budget to pick up things every time it's released, and I had a PS3, I would bet you a dollar to a donut that there's probably at least two on this list that I probably didn't have. So, is it ever going to keep everybody happy? Is it going to take away the sting of having your privacy invaded? No, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm giving Sony the thumbs up for what they've done here. They did the best they could. Of course, there's always going to be bitching and moaning. The hardcore PS3 fanboys are the most hilarious. I already have all five of those games. I'm getting fucked in the ass. Well, you should be, by a big burly man who's not gentle. Patrick, actually, scratch that. Glacinator, any thoughts? Anything you'd like to add? I just brought this up to get it out there to our audience and to also say good job, Sony, and fuck off, fanboys. So, any thoughts? Tear it up.
Besides that, I'd just like to know what the people that are unhappy, what they would have wanted. I just personally would like to know, because this is a pretty good deal from what I'm looking at. So.
Oh, they wanted Mortal Kombat and Portal 2 and things like that. I mean, they wanted brand new shit.
It's like, that's crazy. People are crazy.
Welcome to gamers. Well, that's all I know. It's just welcome to gamers. Patrick, chime in, my friend.
Not a heck of a lot to say. I'm not a huge Sony guy, as you know, but it sounds like a pretty good deal. There's always going to be some super gamer who has every single game, you know, but whatever. Like you said, if he has them on disc, he can now download it for free and trade in those games, or I don't know. I think Sony had to give a pretty good deal, because what happened was their fault. Their network was shit. So they came back with a strong deal, and that's good. I mean, you're always going to have people crying about it, but, you know, overall, I think PlayStation gamers should be satisfied with this.
In closing, too, you Xbox users out there that are trying to compare the slight outage of 2008 and how you got the shaft in comparison to what happened to PSN users, you too also need to shut the fuck up. I had just bought my console when that Christmas outage happened, and it only affected me maybe twice and maybe for an hour. So even though Undertow was not great, bordering on horrible, that outage was nowhere near what happened here. So Xbox fanboys, just shut up. There you have it. Our next story. This one kind of made me laugh because I hate shit like this, and I hate groups like this who are liars and bastards, as far as I'm concerned. It comes to us from Escapist Magazine. Anti-DRM group aims bricks at Nintendo. The Free Software Foundation, more like the We Want to Pirate Shit Foundation, believes the Nintendo 3DS terms of service are too restrictive. Solution? Mail Nintendo a ton of bricks. The seemingly non-sequitur protest is in response to the TOS that all 3DS owners implicitly agree to when purchasing the handheld. Key among the Free Software Foundation's complaints is that the agreement gives Nintendo the right to collect user data at will, which, okay, I kind of understand that, and forbids modification to the machine. Make no mistake, folks. The first one, they might care about it, but it's the second part there that they give a shit about. Of particular interest to the group is the line in the 3DS TOS, holy shit, warning against unauthorized alteration of the handheld or the use of unapproved software, R4, in layman's terms, this would be a warning against modifying the 3DS so that you can play pirated games. Some douchebag from this group goes on about how they want all their users and the millions of people that are members of their association, Read 5, to send in these silly-ass cardboard bricks to Nintendo, because, by God, we're not going to take it anymore. Look, the user data thing, okay, I understand that, but if you really think that all electronic handheld devices you have now aren't collecting data, you're nuts. I'm not sure how we're ever going to stop that shit now that the genie's out of the bottle. And second off...
iPhone.
Exactly. Well, yeah, any phone. Try any phone. Apple's just been getting hammered for it. I'm sure it's the Android. I'm sure it's everything but the rotary dial cell phone that Patrick packs, which we've talked about and made fun of him for thousands of times before. He's probably smart because it's not collecting his personal information. But the iPhone is the big one. Here's the thing. This is one of those cases, and it's something that always pisses me off. Please just be what you are. I understand there's a percentage of DS users and GBA users and all the way back to the original Game Boy who are homebrew people. But that's not what this crap is. This is the, we want to use the R4 WAN Nintendo. The R4 damn near destroyed, as far as I'm concerned, and I did not buy any of these handhelds. Some game sales and some games buy rates and probably some studios. The R4 is a piece of shit and you're a goddamn pirate. So if you want to send bricks to Nintendo about the user data, fine. But call what the rest of your crap is correctly. It's piracy. And you can also kiss my ass. Patrick, after that lovely soliloquy, because I really hate prick groups like this, obviously, would you... I need a calmer head to prevail. Do you have anything to add to this?
Holy crap, they're going to send cardboard bricks to Nintendo. Nintendo is going to... It's going down, man. I'm taking all my stocks out of Nintendo right now. Yes, I have stock in Nintendo. Yes, I was 18 years old and decided to hit the stock market, and that was the only thing I liked. But, oh my God, these guys are going to destroy video games as we know it. Nintendo's going to crumble. Reggie is on his knees begging, please, please, the four people who care... Do not send us cardboard bricks in the mail. Well, okay. Even Duke Nukem thinks this is bad. I don't know. I understand they want a little more freedom with their machine. Didn't a similar thing happen with PlayStation? But, you know, get over it. It's the Nintendo 3DS. Play the games. If you don't like it, go back to your regular DS and pirate all you want.
Well, that's the thing. You remember the GBA and the Afterburner? Patrick, you know, I mean, part of this, too, is Nintendo kind of let this happen for a while, because back then, homebrew was homebrew. It wasn't as much about piracy, but I've heard plenty of people, including Adam Sessler, I think, did one of his rants about it, and I know Jim Sterling's talked about it a few times, that the R4 did hurt sales. You know, everybody's going, well, look, Nintendogs and all this casual crap sold so many numbers for the DS. Well, yeah, that's because everybody was pirating shit like, you know, GTA Chinatown Wars. You know, so I think Nintendo finally had to put its foot down. And to be honest, I want to know the nearsighted nerd that actually read a Terms of Service agreement. I'm not saying he's stupid for doing so. I'm just saying nobody ever does. Glacinator, do you think the world's coming to an end too?
No, not in the slightest. What Nintendo is doing is they're looking around, they're seeing, wow, piracy is affecting video game sales. This is obvious. We need to do something about this. So they make their new handheld clothes. They're supposedly impenetrable from outside hackers or outside sources. And you can't hate on them for doing this. I mean, it's their products. They're trying to sell it to you. That's just how stuff works. You buy it. If you take shortcuts to do stuff, that's not right. So I really, these people are just trying to get stuff easier, get things that they're not supposed to have the wrong way. So, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. Like I said, they should change their name to the We Want a Pirate Software Association. Or foundation, whatever the hell they were calling themselves.
Yeah, it's like actual pirates going to their colonial leaders and like, hey, piracy is illegal. Let us kill people. you know.
Yeah, stop shooting at our ships.
Yeah.
Well, at least they're up front and ballsy about it. That's better than some pirate hacker advocacy groups can claim. Dirtbags. In our last story, this comes to us, this comes to us from Destructoid.com. Basically, if you remember back about, 5 or 6 shows ago, Microsoft was testing a new disk format, partly for piracy, partly to free up space, blah, blah, blah. Well, now it appears that certain older Xbox 360s, and from what other information I was able to gather, like the few people whose launch consoles survived, you've seen these people, they brag all the time that their launch consoles are still fine, become unable to read the disc and give disc read errors and all this, that, and the other thing. Well, Microsoft is aware of the problem, for one, and for two, these consoles, and it sounds like it's a really small number, will be replaced with new 250 gigabyte slims. Now, before you run out to buy one off eBay or to see or to claim that your 360 is doing this, I'm sure we have a couple listeners in our audience, some who've never listened to the show, who would do that. They can tell if it's unreadable over Xbox Live. And right now, this isn't a problem because this update has not been made live, has not been phased in yet, which I don't think it's going to be until, the end of this month. I think May 19th and through the 26th, something like that. So, basically, if you do have this discrete error when the update goes live and a new format goes in place, you just have to contact Xbox support. They'll check. You'll get a new console out of the deal. Here's my thing. This seems awful fast and awful generous to Microsoft. Maybe it's me being a cynical dick. But, Patrick, are they doing this because they're going to have to replace just a small number of consoles, or is this kind of a we don't want to be like Sony moment?
I think they don't want any bad press just because they want to have almost – yeah, I think it's just they don't want to have any bad press over it, and I think it's just going to affect a few consoles. I don't think it's a big deal, personally. That's all I got.
So this is just – well, yeah, no, sorry. I was not – my unmuting finger wasn't fast enough. So, yeah, it's just basically, it sounds like going to be a handful of consoles, basically launch boxes.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, there's going to be some people, they're going to try to see what they can do to their Xbox now that they heard the news to see if they can scam a new, brand new, shiny Xbox Slim out of it. But, yeah, I think it's just, you know, I don't know, maybe these Xboxes are done anyways. Maybe that problem would have happened anyways, so not a big deal.
But still generous on Microsoft's part, even if they're doing it so they don't get Sony-style press. I'll give them that. Yeah. Gleisner, you pretty much agree? Got another take?
The Xbox Rapture is coming. Get ready.
They're all going to die May 21st?
Yes.
Every last one?
I mean, if your Xbox hasn't broken by now, I want to shake your hand and meet you. You are one of the few.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you actually, this was done by Jim Sterling, and if you actually read, he has a little update here, which you guys have seen. It says, his tone was unnecessarily harsh in the original article, blah, 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 blah. He apologizes. But what I found also funny, because I've seen him too, it's almost like those annoying, I have a launch console and it never Red Ring people are getting their smug boast taken away from them. Microsoft has said that anybody affected can reach it, blah, blah, blah. Because I think that's it. I mean, seriously, how many consoles that old could there be left? I tell you what.
3.
Yeah, Patrick, how many do you think? Percentage or actual number? How many do you think? Just guess.
Out of all the people who have Xboxes that I know, 0% have original Xbox.
Yeah, see, that's the same thing here. Yeah. I mean, some people have tried repairing theirs for like 47 times and then cussed Microsoft, you know? I mean,
yeah, so I'm sage.
It's not as subtle a joke when you say the person's sage.
Just a little tip.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, it was Gun Sage. His Xbox broke again. Who didn't see that coming? I'm sure Miss Cleo saw it coming. Before I dig my grave any further, That has been news. Let's play around to what I missed. We've already been here a long time. Patrick, did I miss anything this week?
Well, last couple weeks, including this week, are pretty dead for news. One thing I found interesting, reasonably new, kind of a rumor, kind of not, but since there isn't a lot of news, I'm going to cover it anyways. There was rumors of a new Alan Wake type game. Now it's being highly rumored or almost confirmed that it's going to be on Xbox Live Arcade. The one they're talking about is not the Alan Wake sequel, and it's going to be called Night Springs. So I'm getting this from 1UP.com, but there's other ones too. Not quite sure about, I'm not a big Alan Wake fan, but those that are might be happy to see that before they make an actual real Alan Wake sequel.
Circle?
Yes. I won't even get into that. An Alan Wake sequel. That
I'm thinking the same damn thing, so, you know.
They're highly rumored now that there is an Xbox Live Arcade game, Alan Wake Night Springs, currently in development. So that's pretty much all I got this week for news, extra news. But, you know, hopefully in the weeks to come, closer to E3, we'll get something better to talk about.
I hope they do this, and I can't remember the name of the studio, but I hope whoever funded Alan Wake is also involved in this, and I hope it does well, because we've talked about on previous shows that Alan Wake kind of got freight trained by Red Dead Redemption coming out of nowhere. And Gonsei just said that Alan Wake's a really good game. I eventually plan to play it. I just never find time or always forget about it when I go into GameStop or shopping on Amazon. It's, you know, it sounded like a really good, you know, kind of detective survival horror game. So hopefully maybe they sold enough of Alan Wake to do this little downloadable one and maybe do a sequel, because it sounded like it was a good game. So. Oh,
yeah, definitely. I really liked it. I think Remedy is the name of the company that did Alan Wake. And, yeah, some of those trailers and stuff, like just the world they've created is beautiful. I'm definitely thinking about at some point picking this game up, and I'm not a big survival horror fan this side of anything from Resident Evil 4, but yep. So it'll be interesting. I'll definitely check it out if these quote-unquote very strong rumors are true.
Glacinator, you got anything I missed?
You talking to me?
Yes, I am, Duke. I'm talking to you, you cheap-ass motherfucker.
You're an inspiration for birth control.
Yeah, my good. Attaboy, Duke.
No, I don't have anything necessarily. I mean, right before E3, so it's just speculation, rumor, and we'll see what happens.
Speculation, rumor, and flat-out lying. Because, I mean, Valve did say, oh, we're not announcing anything at E3. Yeah, after you walk out, after Gabe Newell waddled out at the Sony stage last year, I'm not buying a damn word Valve's saying. And neither is anybody else. Everybody on Twitter, oh, yeah, they're not announcing a game, right? Of course, you have half going, yeah, right, they're not announcing anything. Well, believe it when the show's over. And the other half going, we're never getting out. Half-Life 3 episode, whatever. Half-Life 2 episode 3. So, yeah, pretty down week, folks. Which means it's time for Patrick to give you ways to ask us questions like Chris Lloyd did this week and other things. Take it away, Patrick.
Alrighty. Good to see we've got some action on our Facebook page once again. So speaking of Facebook, check out WonderPod Online on Facebook. That's right. Three words, WonderPod Online. Send us a friend request. I always like checking out people's stuff, and it's great to have friends. And, yeah, ask us questions. Amazingly, we got it on our first week this time. We might keep it up, and then people might actually start remembering to ask us questions. So WonderPod Online on Facebook, check us out. Of course, we have the website there, our blog, wonderpodonline.com. Yes, we're very original. That's wonderpodonline.com. All sorts of stuff on there. We got content from Mr. Broken Xbox, Gunsage himself. Lots of good stuff. He goes back over the years and has all sorts of good posts. Glazinator's on there. I'm on there. Mr. Patman, Bruce, lots of stuff. Of course, our podcast is on there at the top. Lots of past episodes. Our podcast, you could download the MP3 there if you don't like Apple. If you do like Apple, check us out on iTunes. Check us out on iTunes. Give us a rating. Apple TV, I've discovered,
You can listen to us on Apple TV as well. So there's some other ways of doing it. There's a few YouTube videos hanging around for highlight reels if you want to check that out as well. Aside from that, we do have our regular hate mail email address that people love to send us hate mail to. What is that email address, Bruce McGee?
It is wonderpodonline@gmail.com, wonderpodonline@gmail.com. Until episode 65, I'm Bruce McGee, and it's still going to be boring. I'll let Duke take it from here. I'm out of here, people. See ya.
See you in hell.
That's right. Goodbye, everybody.
Peace, people.
That's where we're all going sooner or later. Maybe Saturday.